Jefferson, and of course, I did it early a few weeks, but you know I'm gonna hit y'all off with that Goosebumps theme. Let's go. Yeah. We talking Goosebumps today, yeah.
A beat on the beat.
Yeah, let's go. You feel that? Y'all feel that energy coming through? Put your hands up. If you're listening in your office cubicle, put your hands up.
I got one hand up.
My hands are raised.
My other hand's holding a glass of water.
I get goosebumps every time I'm reading in the books. So scary, turn the page and I'm really shook. Matter of fact, I'm real happy cause I'm reading books. Where am I grabbing it? From a nook. Now we coming through with some goosebump sounds. And we coming all around, coming to your town. Matter of fact, don't get so scared that you might just dookie. Just listen to what I say and stay spooky. We got Danny sitting over there.
Sitting
real comfy in her green little chair.
It's Jay.
Joey Cliff hopping on the track today. And maybe that's all I got to say. Cause
if
this the nerdy rap coming back like I'm coming through the trap. Matter of fact, I might come through and do a super wrestling match. People in the DMs asking for the wrestling episode. But I'm like, hey, homie, just hold.
Ooh,
starting off with some bars.
Dropping that good stuff.
Yeah. That has been a great show, everybody.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
Catch us next time.
Honestly, I'd listen to a podcast that was just that for 3 minutes.
Oh, man. If Dope Town wasn't already doing it, that's what my podcast
is. Joey, I was going to say, that is what you would call a song.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I would listen to a 3 minute little diddly.
3 minutes with like a chorus and a good hook and like sang by somebody I love. Oh, man.
Oh, man. Just a 12-track podcast.
Yeah, it's like
CD.
A mini.
All right. Yep. And you heard that right. For those who are just super confused because they're not up on the hip hops, that was Travis Scott's Goosebumps instrumental. So it was a nice little fake out.
Mm-mm.
Everyone thought I was doing the regular theme. I was like, check it out. The instrumental just totally threw me off because the course is I get goosebumps every time and I forgot where it went, so I just started freestyling.
Yeah, it's okay. It was good.
It's all good. But yeah, so we have Joey Cliff today. Hey!
Hey, everybody. It's me.
Writer, comedian,
performer, cat enthusiast, currently writing on Nerdist News with Jessica Chobot.
Yeah, that's me. That's the things I do.
I am also at that channel.
Oh, yeah. I wrote for a show that Danny hosted.
Yeah, you wrote on Natural Selection.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Let's take one quick second to talk about your underground cat network.
Finally, that's the thing I always go on podcasts to promote.
Yeah, that's exploded because, you know, for those who don't know.
Cats are great.
Yeah, cats are great. But we're going to have to take two steps back before jumping in. So the first step is there used to be something called the UCB Underground Network.
Yeah.
And then that turned into a monstrous place that UCB no longer wanted to be associated with, so it had to be changed to the LA Comedy.
It was the LA Underground Comedy Network. And like because we're comedians, everybody decided to make like fake versions of it. So somebody made like an LA Underground Baseball Network where people talk about baseball, an LA Underground like Hat Network where people talk about hats. So I just started posting pictures of cats in all these networks, and somebody said, hey, you should just make an LA Underground Cat Network, and I did, and it got very popular very quickly.
Yeah.
Now it's
Who knew? It's got
8,000 members.
Whoa.
It's the most creatively fulfilling thing I've ever made.
I do not belong in there at all, as I am a dog person to the core.
It's okay.
It was funny because, you know, Ronnie from White Women, I would see him commenting in there and I thought he was doing bits, but he was like having genuine conversation about cats.
Well, that's what I love about it. It's like, that's what I realized in creating it is there are so many people that like want to talk about their cats. Because, and they're just excited to talk about them. Their phones are full of cat pictures, but they feel embarrassed, like, you know, posting on a regular Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever. So like this group basically allows like legit comedians to just geek out about their cats.
Yeah. It's such a fun space. Then there was like some drama there too.
Sometimes there's drama. I put the hard ban whenever anybody does anything not cat related.
Are you the only moderator?
Okay, so I was the administrator for like the first it's been around for 2 years. So for the first year and a half, and then it just got so big. Like mm-hmm. once we started getting like, I don't know, I think like 7,000 people, I'm busy. I'm working a bunch of writing jobs. So I got Haley Mancini and a guy named Jed Pratt to co-moderate it with me. And it's great. We've got like a group chat where we post a lot of cat pictures as well as like, oh, like this thread's getting a little bit spicy. We should watch it.
We love like, spicy.
Oh, somebody's thinking about talking about dogs on this thread. We got to put a stop to
that. That would
be
me. I'm going to infiltrate. I used to have cats. In fact, I got to do, you know me and my impressions iffy. I'm so good at them. My cat would always sound like he was talking. My cat Oreo would sound like he was
Oreo,
saying
very
words.
Good cat name, by the way.
And my other one was Snickers.
I like cats named after food. It's
I think
cute
I originally
thing.
Wanted to call him Crystal or Tiffany back, which is like a very 10-year-old thing to want to name your cat. But then turn out he was a girl, or no, was a boy. And I still could have kept it at Tiffany. But okay, so this is Oreo. When he would talk. Let me see if I can do it. Hello. Mom. Hello. That's how he sounded.
So I, on top of doing that, I host a show at UCB where I just interview people about their cats called Chats on Cats. During one of the shows, I played footage of a cat saying, I love you. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, row, row. And it got such a good reaction that I had to stop and replay the video like 6 times. There was like a 30-second applause and cheer break every time after I'd play it.
Hello,
people
mom.
Love talking cats.
People love talking cats, really. I mean, once cats learn how to talk, we're done for as people.
Yes. So today we're talking about a little goosey and a little bumpies.
Oh, yeah.
The Goosebumps. The goose. Joey, before we get into it, what was your earliest memory of Goosebumps?
So my earliest memory of Goosebumps is when I was in elementary school, I was really into just all things short, scary stories. So like, if you guys remember those books, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, with like the really creepy drawings in them, I would always like check
those
out in the library.
Which Guillermo del Toro is doing now.
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited about that. And like, he's basing the character designs on those original like really
God,
creepy
the
designs.
God, the Harold one or the one with like the stuffed man?
The stuffed man. Like the girl with like the spider coming out of her face. Yeah. So off of that, I was just always looking for like new scary stories to read. And I remember like the Albertsons near where I grew up started stocking these books called Goosebumps books. And I didn't necessarily know a ton about them, but I think I was just running out of stuff to read, and I just saw, I think it was like the first Monster Blood or something like that. And I saw that on the shelf, picked it up because it was like $5 or something like that, read through it in a day, really liked it. So I just like had my mom kind of like get me a bunch of them, and I went through and got all the back copies, and really just like every month, like the day that they like were released in my like local Albertsons, I'd like pick up a copy and read through it.
Yeah, Albertsons, bringing it back. I don't even know. Do those still exist?
I think that I'm from Washington State, so like
we had them. I grew up in Orange County here in California, and they had them. Yeah,
I think that they have to still exist. I think that they're like owned by Kroger now or something like that. But I think that they're still technically called
listeners.
Albertsons.
Let us know. Is there an Albertsons in your place? What about Blockbuster?
just one person's like, yes, I live next to the one Blockbuster in Oregon.
Yeah, that one. Is that the only one that's still?
The only one
I
still
thought it was the one in Alaska.
The Alaska one just shut down. There's one in Oregon that still exists that, like, the guys just said, like, I make no money off of this. I'm thinking about making it a historic monument.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah,
it's like, people might visit. It could be like a road trip thing.
It's somewhere in, like, I think eastern or western Oregon or something like that. It's, like, west of Portland. I want to say in, like, Eugene or something.
Listeners, if you live next to the Blockbuster, please send us a photo.
Yeah, please send us a receipt from that Blockbuster. we need proof.
I know. It's like you don't even have to return those, do you? Please do for that one person that's still working it.
Yeah. If you happen to be next to that Blockbuster, if you could rent a copy of, I'm going to say, the original Independence Day and mail it to me, I'd really appreciate it. I will
you
not
return it. You
could
just watch it on FX every July 4th.
Yeah, but I want to watch it now. It's like July 4th, like, I don't know, what, 9 months from now?
Yeah, get TiVo it, or TiVo, that's not a thing anymore.
Look, I only own a VCR.
Okay.
I only own a VCR.
Okay, moving along. Iffy, can you tell us about some of the history of R.L. Stine?
Yeah, R.L. Stine, or known as Robert Lawrence Stine. I guess he wasn't known
spooky
as.
Spooky name. I didn't know that. Robert Lawrence.
I know, I can see why he just went by R.L., right? Yeah. You know? But he was also sometimes known as Jovial Bob Stein or Eric Affaby.
A funny story there. He used to write joke books.
Oh.
And that's why he went by Jovial Bob Stein. That was his pen name when he wrote just like, it was literally just like 40 jokes to tell at a party or whatever.
What if you were Jokester? If you want anyway.
Yeah.
We know people that have like names like that.
I feel like I would be like Jokey Clift. Oh, it's like Joey Clift, but Jokey Clift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jokefee.
Yeah, Jokefee's good.
Jokefee Shikude.
Wait, Danny, what would your hacky comedy book writing name be?
I don't know. What
it's like
what are
Danny
words?
Danny Hanandez.
Yeah, there you go.
Danny Slapper.
Yeah. Danny Slapper Fernandez.
Oh yeah, that's good. That's store that one. So he was born October 8th of 1943 in Columbus, Ohio, a spooky place.
Ohio is spooky.
Yeah, very spooky.
I went, just side little fact, my ex-husband grew up in Ohio, and he took me to the Witch's Ball, which is a real place. It's this large marble ball and Ohio people, if you know about this, let me know. It's in a cemetery that you have to like park and walk to, but apparently a witch is buried under this marble ball. They said like a woman that killed her family. And the rumor is that they buried her standing up and put this huge marble ball over. I actually looked it up because I'm like, that's not a cool thing, you know, given you know what I mean? Like, you're back like, oh, when you're little and you're like, a witch. And they're like, oh, that was probably an innocent woman. But I looked it up and I don't know if that's even a real, if that's actually what happened.
Okay, so she killed her family. I feel like the distinction between witch and murderer is very murky.
Actually, yeah, witches don't really murder people. That's just a thing that... And they're also not like Satanists most of the time. I don't know.
They're
I've
wicked.
Been studying
it's like,
witchcraft.
Yeah, like
and
it's
they're
its own
not,
thing.
Yeah. And they more, it just was, anyways, that's a whole other. We should do one on witchcraft.
Spooky.
Yeah. But so, Columbus, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a spooky place.
I think it's interesting that his nickname is the Stephen King of children's literature. Like, that's such a cool but also lame nickname.
Yeah, yeah. Like I would, it would be such a...
It's like you're the Mozart of jingles.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, man, if you're like the Dave Chappelle of children's television.
You're the Dave Chappelle of podcasting.
Yeah.
That's a lot harder than like making it for kids, you know, even though, you know, some things for kids are fun and good. Spooky stuff, maybe not so much. Have you went back and seen Are You Afraid of the Dark? Not as scary as I remember. But I digress. He graduated from OSU, Ohio State University, in 1965 with a Bachelor of Arts in English. And
he used his degree. He's like the only English major that used their degree.
Yeah, what's really scary here is the amount of people that don't use their major. Ooh. Loans.
Yeah. Oh, disappointment from your parents.
Man, what a shift that would be if Hollywood just got empty and communications jobs just got impacted with people. Everyone's like, you know, communications. What about communications attracts so many people who really want to chase their dreams? We'll find out on another episode of Nerdificent. On this episode, we're going to talk about R.L. Stein at OSU, who edited the OSU Humor magazine, foreshadowing that that joke book that Joey was talking about. And the magazine was called The Sundial, and it was for 3 out of his 4 years there. He later moved to New York City to pursue his career as a writer.
Yeah, and so he ended up writing a dozen of humor books for kids under the name Jovial Bob Stein. And created the humor magazine Bananas. So Bananas was for teenagers, and it was published by Scholastic Press. It had 72 issues that ran between 1975 and 1984. Did you know about that? Did you ever?
I didn't know about it, but okay, so this is maybe a deep pull. I didn't know until recently that he was such a humor writer, but a friend of mine who does shows at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York actually got R.L. Stein to agree to have an entire late night show based around him. They did live at UCB New York.
Whoa.
And originally I was like, oh, that's crazy that like the Goosebumps writer would agree to have a late night talk show based around him and like head written by him. But like with all of his humor background, I guess that makes sense. The show's called
Nightlight.
Wait,
so he was there? Like,
yeah, so he hosted. It was like The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, but hosted by R.L. Stein.
Did they film any of them?
They probably filmed it. I'm not sure if it's available online, but you can find like sketches of it online. The show's called Nightlight. The premise of the show is that they get a different celebrity or weird figure to basically have a late night talk show built around them every month. So they had like Drew Carey's done it.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Like, but R.L. Stein, like my friend's his name's Eric Cunningham. He like co-created the show. And when I saw he was getting R.L. Stein, I was like, what? And he was like, oh yeah, no, he like wrote comedy for years in college. Yeah.
I can't remember if any of his books I felt like had comedy, but maybe.
But that was sort of what Goosebumps book joke. That's sort of what Goosebumps books were, and that's what made them for kids, is that they were scary books, but they also had just like moments of comedy to undercut the tension. So like I think that he referenced like one of his favorite characters in a Goosebumps book is, I want to say, like King Jelly Jam in I think it was like Escape from Camp Jelly Jam or whatever was the book, and that's a character that would enslave athletic kids to bathe him because he smelled so badly that he needed to be bathed 24 hours a day.
What?
And he, like, at the end of the book, all the kids are freed and they all escape. And King Jelly Jam died because he smelled so bad because nobody bathed him. So it's like, that's like a joke. That's like a funny thing, right?
Yeah.
Like a comedy writer 100%. Would come with that. So it's like that, those details, I think, were always interspersed.
Right. God, he has such a weird mind. He is like Stephen King.
He's just a weirdo.
Yeah, he's a weirdo. So in 1986, Stein wrote his first horror novel, which was called Blind Date. God, that already sounds terrifying. He followed with many other novels, including The Babysitter, Beach House, Hit and Run, and The Girlfriend. He was also the co-creator and head writer for the Nickelodeon Network children's TV show, Eureka's Castle.
Yeah, actually, I didn't know that until recently. That's crazy.
It's coming back full circle.
Yeah. That was just a normal kid's show. I mean, it was a weird kid's show, but that was still just a kid's show.
Yeah. And then in 1989, he started writing Fear Street books. I do remember those. Yeah.
Fear Street was that heat.
And that was right before the Goosebumps series.
And those were like teen horror novels. So it was a lot of just like teenagers in scary situations.
Yeah. So he had a couple of other things. He authored three humorous science fiction books in the Space Cadet series titled Jerks in Training, Bozos on Patrol.
That's some good goofs there. Bozos on Patrol.
And Losers in Space. And then in 1992, Stein and Parachute Press went on to launch Goosebumps.
There was actually... there was a parody series of Goosebumps that was released in the mid-90s called Goof Lumps that like wasn't written by R.L. Stein, but now seeing that he's got such a humor background, I wonder if they released two books, and I think that
if he owns them.
If he like owns them, and if he's just like, yeah, like if it's like a hat tip of like, yeah, one comedy writer to another.
Yeah. So this is what he had to say on horror. I think horror is funny. Horror makes me laugh in a movie theater when the shark comes up and starts eating. You did laugh. We watched Halloween together.
Well, Halloween had solid, strong jokes. But when the faces are smashed up and people getting knife-related, I'm not laughing.
We laughed at, so Iffy and I went opening weekend and we watched the latest Halloween, which did great in the box office.
Yeah, it was number one.
With Jamie Lee Curtis, of course. And we were cracking up way too much. But also there was legit humor because I don't know if people noticed, but Danny McBride wrote on it. And several of those scenes, I was like, this is 100% Danny's humor.
Well, like comedy and horror movies is so good because it just cuts the tension, you know?
It's necessary.
And there are things like A Quiet Place that you want to be scary all the time. Yeah. But like if it's like a slasher flick, you want it to be.
You have like an up and a down. Yeah. So this is his quote. This is from R.L. Stein. I think horror is funny. Horror makes me laugh in a movie theater. When the shark comes up and starts eating the kid, I'm in the theater laughing.
That monster.
I did. One of my friends made me see The Meg, and we saw it in 4D. Which means we paid extra for it, but also there was like water splashing in our face. And
yeah, that'd be fun for the Meg.
We laughed a lot. I just never get scared. There's something missing in my brain where if I'm reading a Stephen King novel or I'm at a horror movie, I just laugh. Writing this stuff hasn't really affected me at all. I think it's funny. In Goosebumps, every chapter end is a punchline.
Oh, what you just pointed out. Joey ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I did it. I'm ruining the flow of the show.
No. You're enhancing it.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. Goosebumps is a collection of novels that were basically most of the time one-shoot stories.
Yeah, it was like an anthology series.
Anthology series of just spooky, dooky stories. And then sometimes you had your choose-your-own-adventure ones, which were...
Those were cool.
Those were like make your own Goosebumps or something like that.
Yeah.
They made 50 of those. I remember I didn't get as into those, but they were good stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, I used to, you know, when you're like, I'm going to just read this, but you had your fingers like, no, I'm going to go back. I didn't want that.
Yeah,
one.
It was a lot of like, yeah, you like save the
same.
Page. Something that's like really funny about, I think it was Choose Your Own Goosebumps, was like sometimes there would be like trivia at the end of a chapter of like previous Goosebumps things. So it's like, if you know who the main character of The Haunted Mask was, flip to this page.
Oh,
if you
yes.
think it's this, go to this page. So it was like homework to read other Goosebumps books.
Great marketing technique.
Yeah, yeah, fair, yeah. fair.
That was the earliest version of DLC right there.
Yeah.
Like, you better figure this out or yeah. you're going to die.
Yeah, if you don't know what happens in Monster Blood 3, then sorry.
So we're actually going to take a quick ad break, and then we're going to get into some of our favorite Goosebumps. Right after this.
Yeah.
And we're back. So we're going to get into some of our favorite ones. But before we do, let's talk about the first ever Goosebumps book. So it was yes. Welcome to Dead House. That was number one. It was released July of 1992. Did you read all of them?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Some... Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Welcome to Dead House was... so creepy. So basically it was the story of a family. A common theme in Arlston stories is that a family moves from out of town, or a kid like visits a family member that's from out of town.
Both things, by the way, frightening to children.
Yeah. Oh,
like
yeah,
moving
totally.
To a brand new
just
town.
Change.
Yeah, change. So this was the Benson family moves to the town of Dark Falls.
Yeah, they move to the town of Dark Falls. They move into this house that's really creepy. One of the kids, it's a family with like, I think it's like two kids and a dog. One of the kids starts to see just like weird, creepy-looking children in their house that will disappear, and they start to realize that they don't really see, like, during the daytime, anybody in, like, the neighborhood that they live in, and then they slowly realize that the reason that they do that, that they're only seeing people at night, is that all these people are ghosts, and the only thing that keeps them alive is that people that live in the house that this family just moved to need to be sacrificed once a year in order to keep these ghosts in existence for another year.
Mm-hmm.
So the family gets wise to this. They manage to stop the guy that sold them the house. I forget exactly how they do it. They like hit him with a wrench or something like that. A spooky ghost wrench. And then the family gets away. And then as they're leaving, they see this like ghostly guy basically like, introducing the house to another family, and another family's getting ready mm-hmm. to move in. So that's kind of the twist at the end, is that this place yeah. always will.
You know what? I know escrow doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there's a lot of things wrong with this story, R.L. Stine.
Yeah, so there is a scene where the Benson kids melt a ghost face off of its skull, which is pretty intense
yeah.
for a Goosebumps book. Best like, face melting.
And like R.L. Stine said in interviews that he didn't think he got the formula right with this one. He thought it was a bit too scary, because before this,
oh, okay.
he was writing for teenagers
yeah.
with the Fear Street series, whereas this was like aged 9 to 12. And like, if you like go back and read it, this book is like legit terrifying. And like, it got a little bit softer as the series went on, but like, I don't know, it's great. It's like a good start to the Goosebumps.
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is pretty terrifying, though. And those
oh, yeah.
were in my elementary school,
yeah.
Scholastic or whatever book fairs.
But I think that those had to have been written in like the 80s or something, right?
Yeah, when like it was okay to.
Well, it's just like they were like less aware of it.
They didn't care
it.
About it as
yeah,
much. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Joey. Do you want to talk about one of your favorite ones, though?
Okay, so my top of the list favorite Goosebumps book is a book called One Day at Horrorland. Okay.
I was going to say, too, because a lot of people yeah. remember the covers. So I yeah. just wanted to say the cover of Welcome to Dead House is a haunted house where a man with a heavy brow is making a fire in the fireplace while the door is open.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So my favorite Goosebumps book is One Day at Horrorland. The cover of it has a sign that says "Welcome to Horrorland" with like a spooky monster kind of peeking his head over the sign. The basic premise of this is that a family called the Morris family is on a road trip, and their car breaks down outside of this weird haunted theme park. And I think that their car like explodes outside of the theme park too. And then somebody working the theme park just says, "Hey, we'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. You can hang out in this theme park while we're figuring out. Here are some free tickets." So they go to this theme park, and as you expect, a bunch of monsters show up. And they're basically, the entire time that they're in the theme park, convinced to stay there because there's like a contest to win a free car.
Eventually, oh my gosh, just conveniently what they need.
It's conveniently what they need. So that convinces them to stay. Monsters start showing up. They run for the monsters. They eventually learn that the only way to beat the monsters is by pinching them, because apparently they're like balloons. So if you pinch them, they deflate. And this is a real thing. Arlstein, he's a real cut up, real funny guy.
Don't take it too seriously.
So they pinch all these monsters to, the monsters are called the Horrors, to get them to deflate. And they jump into this free car that they find and drive away. And then when they get home, they realize that one of the Horrors was like clutching onto the bumper of the car. And they're really terrified. And the last page of the book is the Horror apologizing for scaring them and then offering them free tickets to go back to the park if they want to go. And then the Horror leaves. And like, what I like about this is I think that this is one of the few Goosebumps books that ends with a relatively happy ending.
Okay.
Usually the way that these end is like, it ends with some sense of like, oh, like, you know, everybody's going to die, or like, oh, this is going to continue. Whereas this just ends with like, yeah, the family's car got destroyed and they left with a free car. And like the monster followed them. The monster just gave them free tickets back to the theme park, which they probably won't take up on it, which they probably won't take the monster up on it. And I don't know. It's the family is left relatively unscathed. And there is it's nice to read a Goosebumps book that kind of the twist doesn't have an edge, I guess.
Yeah. The thing that I like about this is that the family is involved, because I've been watching The Haunting of Hill House, which I love. I think it's great. But like that and just in horror and scary movies in general, I feel a lot of times the parents don't believe the kids.
Yeah.
And that bothers me so much, because I made this point on Twitter. I'm like, if my child were to be like, I saw a ghost, I would 1,000% believe them, just because they're so much more sensitive. I'd be like, this house is haunted. This house is haunted. I believe you. But it seems, I think it's nice for kids to have their parents believe, like in this, you know, in a lot of, I don't know if that's always the case in his books, but in this one in general, in this one in particular, I like the fact that the parents were also like, holy crap, there are monsters.
We also understand this is crazy.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is just like, I feel that's a common theme in scary movies where people gaslight children. They just don't believe them.
Well, it's just like, no, don't worry. Your friend that disappeared, like, and we heard this crazy scream, that was probably just a dog or whatever.
And you have scratches on your back. And I know, you know, you probably just got in a fight with a kid at school.
Yeah, it is just, it's a weird horror movie trope that like, if it's like lazy writing, because it basically just makes it so it's like, oh, we're earning another 30 minutes of this movie for the parent to realize there's a monster.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the more fun choice is, like, no, the parents are on board, too. There are monsters. So now they got to figure this out together.
I just feel like if I would definitely believe a kid of, like, there's, you know, kids are scary themselves. And when they draw those little pictures, like, oh, who's the girl with all the black hair in front of her
it's
face?
Just like, it's just like, oh, cool. So you drew this drawing of all your friends. And then there's a giant guy with a knife who you call, like, the knife guy?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I should probably look into that.
Hey, Sally, you drew Jesus upside down on the cross.
Yeah. And then just it says die, die, die next to his head. You okay?
Anyways, I like that the family was involved in this. Iffy, do you have a favorite Goosebumps book? I know you wanted to share.
Yeah. That was a good ending. Sorry, I was just getting a refresher.
That's cool.
So my favorite... So the way I picked a lot of my Goosebumps books was the cover. And that's one thing I want to say.
And like the artist was amazing.
Yeah, the artwork for the covers were so good. And that's when I looked up the list of the books, because I was tracking down my book, I had like huge nostalgia just seeing all these covers again.
I just want to say the guy that wrote that painted the most memorable covers is a guy named Tim Jacobus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And he like would hand paint them every month.
They look hand painted.
Yeah, they're great.
So freaking good. Like, I'll make my way up to like the one that I am doing, but I just want to shout out some of these dope covers. So the cover that scared me the most was The Barking Ghost. Which, if you haven't seen that one, it's literally the most terrifying dog you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, it's like white with red eyes, right?
Yeah. And it's completely dark, the cover. And when I saw that one, I was like, oh, I remember that one.
Well, that's like, I don't usually have like nostalgia that hits me in movies. Like Ready Player One didn't do a ton for me, but the end of the first Goosebumps movie, when they're just doing stylized like crazy 3D drawings or and renders of Goosebumps covers.
Yeah.
I like got chills. I got goosebumps, you might say.
Mine, I think, is the as far as covers is Night of the Living Dummy. Dummy is just
that's
coming
a creepy
back.
Dummy.
Monster Blood 2 with the hamster on the cover is the one that just like it just that's gonna be in my mind forever.
Yeah. And then I think the second runner-up was Attack of the Mutant, just because it looked so cool, and then it turned out to be a pretty creepy story. It's basically this like bootleg Batman-looking cat who who's like swinging at it. But the one that I picked and the one that I remember so greatly reading is mostly because I didn't expect it to be what it ended up being. It was called The Beast from the East. It was this beast on a bamboo tree, blue and furry. It looks kind of cute, but looks kind of creepy. And I was like, where's this going? And the concept of the Beast from the East is this family, they go on this camping trip in the forest, and these kids run into these blue beasts, and they have to play basically a game of tag, but with a caveat is if they lose, then the beasts get to eat them. And so what ends up happening is they get the rules, and one of the rules is if they're in the brown square, the free eat square, the beast can eat them no matter what, and they have to find this tree by sundown. And all of these different events happen. One of them ends up getting captured. They end up winning, but they kind of cheat, and they say, oh, because, you know, the game wasn't called over, you still lose. And while they're getting ready to cook them, the brother who was captured escapes and saves them. And they surmise that because the brother, this move is actually a complicated move in their like weird bear tribe.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, since they knew to do that move, they must be level 3 and you were playing against level 1. You were playing against level 1. So sorry for making you play. It doesn't count. And then it in the twist is Flegg. So Flegg is the name of the leader and goes, Flegg apologizes for making the kids play the game and lets them go. Flegg even gives the kids directions back to the campsite. The kids follow Flegg's directions, but they are surprised by a beast. Ginger says that beasts can't tag them since they are level 3, but the beast reveals that he is also level 3 and tags Ginger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dun, 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 that's great. Dun, dun, dun.
Such a good
yeah, that's like just about every Goosebumps book has just like a twist like that. That's like, oh, they're still fucked.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say mine is the Haunted Mask. The Haunted Mask. It is a picture of a little girl in overalls, but she's holding up a terrifying mask. And this was about, this haunted me not only because of the book, which I had, but I also had the VHS of the episode.
Oh, yeah.
So this was Carly Beth buys a Halloween mask from a store. It's super haunting movie of it or the TV show. After putting on the mask, she starts acting differently. She gets super aggressive, and then the mask gets stuck to her face. So this actually was inspired by R.L. Stine's son, Matthew Stine, who put on a mask and then had trouble getting it off during Halloween.
Dad.
Yeah. I just remember how terrifying it was, and like her, like the mask becoming part of her skin, like she couldn't find like where it stopped and ended. And I don't know, so creepy. And I had a mask just like this. So this came out in, this was the 11th book in the Goosebumps series, and came out in 1993.
A really good twist at the end of that was she finally gets the mask off. She, you know, like takes it back to the shop that she bought it from. And then she comes home, and the last page of the book is she sees that her brother was like, hey, check out this scary mask. And he puts it on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My next couple favorite Goosebumps books would be pretty much the entire like Monster Blood saga. They made 4 of them, Monster Blood 1, 2, 3, and 4. They basically ran the gamut. I think that the final main Goosebumps book was Monster Blood 4, and like usually one would come out every 10 issues or so. And the basic premise of it is that there was a wizard or a witch named Sarah Beth that took like kind of a silly putty-esque substance and used a magic spell to cause it to grow, kind of like the Blob. Hmm. So
sounds a lot like Rita from Power Rangers to me.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
putty,
man.
Making things grow.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. So basically... this monster blood is used to make, like, in the second one, like, a hamster eats some and then grows to a huge size. The first one, I think a dog eats some and then grows really huge. And then basically these people have to, or the, you know, the teens that are always in it, it's Evan Ross and Andy are their names. They have to figure out a way to stop this giant thing that's grown. In Monster Blood 2, one of the kids comes up with a solution when the hamster gets to the size of being, like, building-sized, where he eats some, and then he's like, oh, I gotta fight this hamster. Yeah. So he grows gigantic, and then he just has a brawl with a hamster.
Oh, that's great.
Something that I think is funny about this series is there's a huge plot hole, and they establish at the end of Monster Blood 1, I think that what they, like, they, the witch Sarabeth, you know, comes to life, and they manage to defeat her, and they realize that once the monster blood hits an expiration date, then it loses all of its magical power. So that happens at the start, at the end of the first monster blood, you know, the witch passes away, the monster blood expires. But then for some reason, the monster blood still works in Monster Blood 2 and 3 and 4, but they don't really explain why or how.
Yeah.
And then in Monster Blood 4, there's, like, a really weird twist where they find blue monster blood that, like, kind of turns into these weird slug monsters. And, like, when you eat them, it doesn't make you grow. It just makes you multiply.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, so it's...
God, someone needs to make, like, a video game, like, or a movie. Monster Blood is the coolest name.
That's, like, I watched... So watching, like, the first Goosebumps movie and the most recent Goosebumps movie that just came out a couple weeks ago, they haven't touched Monster Blood at all. They'll reference it as, like, a throwaway joke. Like Jack Black's R.L. Stine will say, like, oh, what should I do? Use Monster Blood on him?
Uh-huh.
But they haven't actually had Monster Blood appear in either movie.
Okay.
So I think that, like... If you're Sony and you're trying to figure out how to make a Goosebumps movie, like, give us a Monster Blood movie. There's four Monster Blood books to pick from.
Do it. Monster Blood. Remember, like, that? Remember that, like, weird, that, like, monster truck movie that came out?
Oh, yeah, I think it was literally called just, like, Monster
Truck. It was like the truck was alive. I wanted to say before we move on to the next one, so I touched on The Living Dummy, which was super. And I remember we talked about how that was a Twilight Zone episode, too.
I mean, a lot of these were, like, blatant ripoffs of other things.
Yeah. Say Cheese and Die, which was a where it takes a picture and then you see, you see yourself dead?
It's,
or
like,
you see
yourself in a position of bad luck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that is literally a Twilight Zone episode.
And, like, funny story, like, the Are You Afraid of the Dark actually did an episode that seemed like a blatant ripoff of Say Cheese and Die, which I think they're both probably looking at the Twilight Zone episode. And then when the Goosebumps TV series came out, they made essentially their own Say Cheese and Die.
Yeah, there's a ton of them.
Of just like a spooky camera.
Which I respect, because now it's for, you know, not all those kids are going to watch Twilight Zone. But I did want to say...
But they should.
For sure, I watched it when I was little, and it changed me and my mom. My mom watched it when she was little. So Night of the Living Dummy was actually a saga, because there was... Living Dummy.
There was like seven of them.
There was Night of the Living Dummy 2 and Night of the Living Dummy 3, and I would be remiss if I didn't say that it was starring Slappy, the dummy, who we later see. I mean, we saw in the TV series, which was super creepy.
Yeah, the movies.
And
yeah.
He's also in the movies, so he's definitely
the main
antagonist. He's like, to me, almost like the Crypt Keeper or something for Tales from the Crypt. Like, he is there. He's kind of like the mascot, I feel like, of Goosebumps.
They actually have, there's a currently running Goosebumps book series called Slappyland that literally is.
Oh, that's so
cool. Like, it's Tales from the Crypt, but each story is narrated, is, like, introduced by Slappy.
Yeah.
I forget the name of the character, but there actually is a Goosebumps mascot that's like a skeleton with a mohawk.
Oh, really?
It's
Slappy.
Like, I think
it's called
Slappy. Like Willy the Skeleton or whatever.
No, Willy the Skeleton.
It's like, I think that if you buy, like, on the inside page of the book, it's just like, ask Willy or whatever.
So, Joey, why don't you tell us one more of your favorite Goosebumps? I'm sure everyone's going down nostalgia lane right now.
So my final favorite Goosebumps book, it would be Goosebumps number 30. It's called It Came From Beneath the Sink. And the premise of it is a family lives in a house and they find this, like, weird sponge underneath their sink, and I think that the daughter of the family finds this sponge and realizes that it's breathing.
Ew.
And she doesn't entirely know what the deal is with it, but she realizes that whenever she has it, that she experiences bad luck, and then the sponge will, like, make a noise and people around her will experience bad luck. So she tries to get rid of this thing because she realizes, oh, this is some mythical beast that's causing bad luck. I forget the exact name of it, but there's, like, a specific name in the book for this mythical beast that is this sponge that creates bad luck and feeds on bad luck. And like she tries to bury it like under her yard, but it like kills all the plants that her dad just planted. So her dad's like, oh, why'd you do that? She
doesn't believe her.
She tries to like give it away, but I think that every time that she gives it away, it like appears back in her house. They realize that like if you try to get rid of the sponge, like the only way to get rid of it is to die and it's passed on to somebody else.
What?
or if you give it away, you will die within a day of getting rid of it. So finally she learns that the way to get rid of this thing after like it really messes her up, like it makes her like accidentally cut her hands with scissors and do a bunch of other stuff. She learns that like it feeds on fear, so the only way to kill it is love. So she basically like pets it like it was a cat and says like, oh, I love you, little guy. And then the thing is like, no, my one weakness. And then it like disintegrates and then falls apart.
That's so great.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of like a good thing to teach kids.
But that's like, I feel like every fourth Goosebumps book, the ending is like, oh, love was its only weakness.
You know, I kind of like that. It's yeah, like, it's die, die, but also love.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's I like that.
It was good. It was just a nice like low stakes like weird villain, and I think that that's like one of Arlstein's strengths is just like villain like just like monsters that are weird. Like everything doesn't have to be a werewolf. It can be a weird small sponge guy that like feeds on bad luck or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess listeners, if you remember one that ends kind of in a similar way with like a loved one, let us know because I'm kind of fascinated. I can't remember all of the books. There's so many. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to get into the TV show and the movies right after this.
I'm watching this as it goes on, and these effects weren't as scary as they were for me for the kids.
Show the dog with the eyes.
Yeah, those dog eyes do not hold up.
They're just like googly eyes.
Just watch. It looks like someone did it as a bit for. We're just going to play it one more time so Joey can see these eyes.
Oh, wasn't Arlstein in? Was he in part of the theme? He showed up in.
That's
yeah, yeah, he's
great.
At the beginning because okay, his yeah, briefcase he's... opens and okay. lets out
yeah,
the
and he's
ghostly
like, oh no, my pages.
He looks like he does not care. He's just straight up literate.
That's like, once again, something I love about Arlstein is like, he seems like a writer in the coolest sense of the word. And then yeah. he's like, I don't know, just what his job is. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't seem like a guy that like overly romanticizes the process.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Interesting to note, Ryan Gosling was actually in, one of the early episodes of the Goosebumps TV series. It was specifically the adaptation of Say Cheese and Die.
Mm.
He was one of the main characters. And, you know, watching it, when I was watching that growing up, I was definitely like, oh, yeah, that kid's going to be in a movie named Drive.
Yeah.
You mean when you saw him on the Mickey Mouse Club?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he was making his rounds.
I just want to correct myself a little bit. The Goosebumps Slappy Land World series is actually called Slappy World. So you guys should check that out. It's great.
Ooh.
So Goosebumps... The TV show is a Canadian-American horror anthology.
That's why Ryan Gosling was in it.
True, iffy.
A Canadian boy.
Yeah, I'm sure it was probably filmed in like Vancouver or something.
So it originally began airing on YTV in English, and it also aired in French and Canada. That's cool. Network 10 in Australia in 1996, and on Fox Kids. I think that's where I remember watching it
yeah.
in the United States. Starting September 4th, 1995, and ended September 7th, 1998. It only ran for 3 years. God, it feels so much longer than that.
There's something that's so, like, doing this podcast and sort of revisiting a lot of this Goosebumps stuff, something that's so surprising to me is how insane, like, I didn't realize how popular Goosebumps books was. Like, this show was the most popular television show for kids for, like, 2 years in a row. And Goosebumps books have sold like 400 million copies worldwide.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So it had 4 seasons and it had 74 episodes.
Yeah.
Most
of the episodes were like retellings of Goosebumps stories. So I believe like the Horrorland episode, I think, was split into 2 episodes. But other than that, there was like a couple slappy episodes. And then other than that, they just kind of like, they covered all the hits basically.
Uh-huh. The Cuckoo Clock of Doom.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Ghost Beach, Monster Blood, like you had talked about. Revenge of the Lawn Gnomes. I remember that one. Yeah. So they had that. And then, and I used to rent, I think they used to have oh, yeah, those oddly enough at Blockbuster.
Two episodes per tape.
Mm-hmm, I used to rent them. So then fast forward to 2015. I can't believe it took that long to get a Goosebumps movie.
Okay. So interesting story there. They tried to make a Goosebumps movie as far back as like 1998. But they just couldn't figure out which book to base the movie on because there were like 62 very popular main Goosebumps books plus all of the bonus books like Goosebumps 2000 and all that stuff. But they couldn't figure it out. In 2008, I think, they finally settled on, oh, what if it was like a fake biography of R.L. Stine? That way you can kind of couch it in that and use it to explore all of the Goosebumps books. And then I believe in 2012 was when there was first like a pretty good draft of the script and like that got greenlit and pushed along. And then I want to say in like 2013, Jack Black got attached as R.L. Stine, and the entire time, like R.L. Stine, he said in interviews that like he was like, oh, like they would tell me stuff about a Goosebumps book movie, and I would not believe them because like they kept on saying there was going to be one for 20 years.
Yeah, wow. I wonder if he liked the fact that Jack Black, because they're both, he's a comedy person.
Yeah,
I mean that's a cool thing about the movie is. For those of you that haven't seen it, Jack Black definitely plays R.L. Stine like a big old goof. He plays him like a guy who's just very, like, very full of himself. And he's like, Goosebumps were the greatest books ever written. And
I wrote them.
And I wrote them, me, the greatest writer of all. Like, there's literally a monologue where he says, they sold 400 million copies.
Doesn't he have kids? I mean, I saw it, but it was once. I saw that, yeah.
In the movie, does he have kids?
Yeah.
Okay, spoiler for the movie. The first movie, he has a daughter who's revealed to be a ghost from one of his books.
Oh, wow.
That's the big twist at the end. But Jack Black has said that he's surprised that R.L. Stine totally got it. He 100% got, oh, I would have to play R.L. Stine as just like a big, goofy, pompous guy for this to work. And like he was completely on board. R.L. Stine even has a couple of like Stan Lee cameos in the first Goosebumps and the second Goosebumps movies. They're not like super showy. It's like the first Goosebumps movie, he pops up at the end literally as just an extra school teacher. So, like, the movie ends with Jack Black, R.L. Stine, deciding to teach English at this high school of these kids that he, like, his books accidentally tormented. And he's just walking through the hallways on his first day, and then R.L. Stine walks past, and Jack Black is like, oh, hey, Mr. Black. And R.L. Stine's like, hey, Mr. Stine.
Oh, I get it.
It's like that kind of thing.
They switched.
Yeah. But he's still dressed like R.L. Stine. He's still wearing black and carry and like looks really like annoyed to be there.
Yeah. So the plot follows a teenager trying to save his town with R.L. Stine's help. After all, monsters, demons, and creatures from the Goosebumps franchise begin to escape from the books, wrecking havoc in the real world. That's actually a good, whoever came up with that, that's a good plot.
It's a good plot. And like it, the Goosebumps stories are very like, I don't know, like R.L. Stine wrote each book in like 10 days. They're very, like, they can feel really formulaic. Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, he had to write one a month. He had a couple of ghostwriters, but like, he said that in interviews it usually would take him like 3 weeks to write a Goosebumps book, but there have been times that he's been able to churn one out in 6 days.
Wow.
Like, I think that he wrote one in 10 days. But so they're very much like, hey, we gotta like slap on a twist at the end. Oh, great, it's Scary Mummies, get it. Like, and he would actually start with the title of the book and then figure everything out from there. And that's something they actually, there's a joke that they reference in the movie where he keeps on saying like something like Slappy's Revenge. That's a great title. Like, that's all I need. But like the basic plot line of most Goosebumps books is like pretty formulaic, and there's like some heart to it, but it's like, they're just short enough that you wouldn't necessarily want to make a feature length movie about it.
Mm-hmm.
So like by doing this where it's sort of like R.L. Stine is one of the main characters and it's all about all of his books, it gave it heart because it justified like, why, like, it's about the guy that would write Goosebumps books and how he like grew up and he didn't have any friends and he wrote these like scary novels because he wanted to like punish the world. And the movie's basically about him learning that he does need people to survive. And like, it's a really sweet story. And it really makes me like R.L. Stine more.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I was going to say, so the Goosebumps movie that dropped in 2015, it grossed $150 million.
Yeah, off a $50 million budget, so it did real well.
Oh, yeah, its budget was $84
million. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And then Goosebumps 2, Haunted Halloween, just dropped for all you listening, October 12th of this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And you already saw it.
Yeah, I just saw it.
And we're not going to give away spoilers because it just came out this month.
No spoilers, but it's spooky. But
was it better than the first one?
Okay, so I will say the budget of the first one was $85 million. The budget of the second one was $35 million.
And what?
You could feel it. You could feel it.
So that must mean so on the first one I was reading, it said it had relatively positive reviews from critics.
Okay, so the first one was like a solid B+. It was like an enjoyable watch.
That seems to be enough in Hollywood these days.
And it was good. Like, I mean, you said you saw it. It's like I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. Just as a big Goosebumps fan, it ticked all the
nostalgia
boxes.
If I were younger, I would be more into it.
Yeah, like it was.
I wouldn't be as harsh.
Like it was a good use of the franchise, and it made me, I thought it was fine. The second Goosebumps movie, as opposed to being about all Goosebumps books, really just focused on one Goosebumps book, and because of that, it felt like it was a 90-minute episode of the TV show, as opposed to being, like a heartfelt movie. And there were good things about it, but it was definitely like the first one was them testing out the franchise, whereas the second one feels like, oh, if we can just churn out $35 million Goosebumps movies, it'll give us $50 million on an investment. We'll just keep doing that. Mm-hmm. So, like, if this does well, I'm sure we'll get one that's just based on Monster Blood and one that's just based on Horrorland and one that's just based on The Haunted Mask. Something that was interesting about it is that Jack Black plays the role of R.L. Stine in the Goosebumps franchise, and they wrote two drafts of the script for the second Goosebumps movie, one where Jack Black was going to be in it and the other where he wasn't going to be in it. I'm sure it was entirely based on if he was going to say yes to it or not.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you could really feel it. Like, he's barely in the second one. He's only in, like, four scenes, and they're all, like, pretty short.
Well, you know what? He was shooting that other one, the clock. What was that?
Oh, the house with the clock in its walls?
Yeah. That actually to me, it looked good, but I don't know if it was. That came out, too, right? It was like he had two competing movies.
But I think that it's just like
for the same audience.
Yeah,
like
for
that's
the same
around
audience.
The same age.
Well, House with the Clock in Its Walls is also based on like a popular book series. So it's literally
it's
just
also spooky.
Yeah, so it's both based on like Halloween based movies.
Yeah.
But this I'm glad that they had Jack Black for it, and it made and it didn't have any of the returning stars other than Slappy from the previous one, and I think Slappy was even voiced by a different guy.
Oh, really?
yeah, like this was definitely it felt like, I don't want to be too harsh on it. I thought it was fine for what it was. It's a kid's movie. You know, if you're a kid, like if I was younger, if I was like Goosebumps book reading age when I first started reading Goosebumps books and I watched it, I'd probably think it was great. Mm-hmm. But like, you could definitely feel that like, oh, they were like, this was their like, oh, like we're going to take this script that has nothing to do with Goosebumps, add a couple Goosebumps references to it, and then film it and throw Jack Black in at the end and call it good, you know?
Yeah. God, that's funny. I was going to say, because I was looking at everything that's come out with this, and not to bring it back to the Twilight Zone, but I will. They had an episode in a book called A Night in Terror Tower.
Yeah,
which is very much like Tower of Terror.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That was another good Goosebumps book. I really liked that one. It was like there was like a time travel element to it. I don't know. It was just like it's definitely like one that I remember well.
Well, I think can you watch Goosebumps on Netflix?
The original movie or just the TV series?
The TV series.
I feel like it's got to be available on one of those streaming services.
Oh, what? It looks like it is. I'm trying to pull it up right now on Netflix. Yep, they have 5 seasons from 1998. That's dope. So I guess you can go and watch those. Go check out the. Do you have a favorite that was from the TV show?
A favorite from the
TV
show.
That's different than the books?
So I guess that, like, I think that my favorite from the TV show would probably be Say Cheese and Die, because it, like, really faithfully followed what the book was.
Mm-hmm.
I also appreciated all of the, all of the Slappy episodes.
Yeah, he's creepy.
What I thought was funny about it was that it was very clear that, like, what was the cheapest ventriloquist dummy that we could find?
Yeah.
Like, the Slappy in the TV series does not look good.
Those are oh man, some of these graphics. Well, you can go and watch Goosebumps. Wait, is that Hayden Panettiere? Oh, I don't know. I bet there's more. I bet there's more child actors that are in this than we don't realize. If you want to watch the movie, you can. But also the original series, it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
Do you have any other thoughts, Joey?
Any other thoughts? I think that. I think that Goosebumps is a really fun series. It's definitely like, uh, I I didn't read Harry Potter books growing up. I read Goosebumps books, and I think that you know, it's like it's a good thing to read when you're like just getting started and like starting to get really into literature. Something I think is really funny is that the reason that R.L. Stein thinks that Goosebumps books are successful, and this is a direct quote, is I think that people liked Goosebumps books because they didn't have drinking or violence.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They were for kids.
They were for kids. But yeah, I don't know. They're good. If you haven't read them, you should check them out. Also, watch the first Goosebumps movie and maybe wait for the second one to come out on Netflix.
That's good, solid advice. Iffy, do you have final thoughts on Goosebumps?
No, I think it's super fun. I think, you know, one thing that I will always take from Goosebumps and I thought was cool was that it got me reading. You know, like, that's cool. Like, so I think, you know, because I feel like
sometimes... I went to my Albertsons, like, the first week of every month, like, wanting Goosebumps books.
Yeah. And I feel like there's so many parents who are, like, picky about what your kids are reading, where they feel like you need to be reading, you know, The Theory of Everything by Stephen Hawking. And it's like, no.
Yeah, if you're 10 kids... and you haven't read The Theory of... Read A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking. Yeah. How dare you?
So I think, you know, anything, even if it's just comic books, buy your kids comic books. Just get them reading.
Well, and like Goosebumps books, I'm sure that like reading so many of them helped me develop my comedic voice at really young. Yeah. And it gave me like a weird sensibility that I've like taken into adulthood, into like professional writing jobs.
I wanted to say one final thing, and that is that 5 years before he would be Anakin Skywalker, Hayden Christensen was Zane in Night of the Living Dummy 3, Parts 1 and 2.
I want to say one more thing. I host a podcast called 25 Minutes of Silence, where the premise is that a guest and I just sit in silence for 25 minutes. It's a real thing. You can Google it. It's super funny. Like,
is it hard to stay silent? Do sometimes you break it?
I mean, so the rule is that we can't talk to each other. So, usually, if I have somebody on it, they'll work on their screenplay and I'll read a book or whatever. But I reached out to R.L. Stein to ask if he would be a guest on the show. Mm-hmm. I just sent a message to his fan Facebook page. And he personally responded to tell me that he wasn't going to do it.
Wow.
But it was still a very nice, hey, thanks for asking me. I'm really busy right now, so I don't think I can do this, but I appreciate it.
But did he sign it like R.L. Stein?
I think that it was dash
was
R.L.
Okay.
He said, dash, this was me. So R.L. Stein also seems like a nice guy.
He's chill.
Yeah.
He's cool. Slide into his DMs,
slide into his DMs. He'll probably respond. Tell him Joey Clift sent you.
Joey, where can everyone catch you?
You can find me on Twitter at Joey Tainment, and you can look at Cats on Facebook at the LA Underground Cat Network.
Heck yeah.
Oh, actually, I should probably promote a book. I've got a book that I wrote called The American Indian Ready to Wear Catalog 2018. I'm an enrolled member of the Cowlitz Indian Tribe. I basically wrote this short zine that... it's all about Native American representation in media in the form of a fashion catalog, and it's a satire book, and it's illustrated by a very good Cowlitz artist named Janet Meyer, who's also my mom, so you guys should check it out.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's available on redcatpress.com.
Wait, is it out now?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah, send us a link or a picture totally. And stuff, and we'll tweet it out when this drops.
Oh, great, yeah, I'll send it out.
Heck yeah. I'm at Ms. Danny Fernandez. What is this? This is coming out Tuesday. I don't know. Follow me on the socials. Hit me up. Send me memes. This is our last week of...
Send her one meme.
Send me one meme. I require one meme to survive.
Every day. Just...
this was our last Spooktober.
Yeah.
We have some more spooky episodes coming up, but this was our last one for a little bit.
Yeah. So thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed Spooktober. As you know, find me at IffyWadiwe, IFYNWADIWE on Twitter and Instagram, and IffDs on Twitch. As a reminder, like I said, you have to re-up those Prime subs every month. So they don't just re-up. If you pay, the sub re-ups every month. But if you use those free Twitch Prime subs, you're going to have to come back to the stream, hang out with me, and hit that up again. And make sure you run to the Tee Public. We have those Stay Spooky shirts. Once it turns to November, they will be gone. You will have to wait another year before you can buy them.
Oh, no.
Or if you just need shirts for your back, you can check it out. We have tons of dope things for you to wear to show people listen to one of the dopest podcasts out right now. But yeah, thanks for listening, and for one last time, stay spooky.